I'm Trisha Helfer, and you are listening to After the Credits at row3.com.
Welcome to another episode of After the Credits. I am your host, Marina, and joining me today, as usual,
Colleen from 353 Review,
Dale from DigitalDoodles.com.
How are you guys holding up?
From what? Sorry, where am I?
You're in the studio.
I need more coffee.
Of course.
Yes.
Drink, be merry. Just going to talk about a couple of movies that we've seen recently, a few of which are out in theaters, and a couple of others which are on DVD, and maybe one which you can't find anywhere except VHS at a garage sale, but we'll get to that in a minute. Come on by row3.com for your daily dosage of movie goodness.
Because we'll stop at nothing to find the movies to bring you the reviews.
Oh, yes, that's right. So yeah, if you've got that movie in your garage that you want to torture us with, drop me a line. We'll hook you up. Colleen will be more than happy to view it and review it. Right there, Colleen.
The worse, the better.
You heard it here, people. You heard it here. Okay, so come on by row three. Drop us a line. Join the conversation. A reminder that the Movie Club podcast, I believe we're recording in like 2 weeks' time. So you have 2 weeks to watch movies, Shortcuts and I Heart Huckabees. And okay, that's it for the announcements. Let's get right in. Woo-hoo. To
the happening.
Okay, you say in German, it's way better. M. Night Shyamalan. I said that totally wrong.
Shyamalama ding dong.
M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening. I wish I could say cut to the trailer now, but you know what? I can't be bothered. Yeah. Colleen, what do we want to say about The Happening?
I really like this film.
Me too.
I found it absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, it was pretty hysterical.
I was laughing through most of it. And it, as like a sort of like a B-movie comedy kind of thing, I thought it really worked. But
okay, I haven't seen it, but it wasn't supposed to be a comedy, was it?
Well, he's come out since and said it's supposed to be like a modern B-film, but I think it's a cop-out.
Yeah, I think he's just covering his ass. But, you know, on the other hand, I can't possibly imagine that. I mean, he's obviously a competent director. You know, if he hadn't made any good movies, I could kind of say, okay, the guy doesn't know what he's doing. You know, he's clueless. This is a crappy movie. But he's shown that he actually does know what he's doing. I can't possibly imagine that anybody in their right mind, producer, director, actors themselves, would see this and say, yeah, this is actually really good acting. I mean, it's god-awful. But I honestly think it's god-awful on purpose. Because if it passed all of the quality assurance tests like this, somebody's got issues and it's not just the Shamhammer. Like, seriously, a lot more people need to be, like, losing jobs or something because it's god-awful.
Did you just call him the Shamhammer?
I did. I stole that from somebody else.
That's awesome.
It's not mine. It's not mine. I'll have to give credit to John at the movie blog who came up with the Shamhammer. But I quite like it, so I'm using it.
You know what? The dialogue in this film is just so classic.
Well, it's funny because everything is so damn cheesy. The dialogue is cheesy. The acting is cheesy. Well, the story itself is pretty cheesy. I mean, come on now. It's pretty bad. But the execution isn't bad at all. Mm-hmm. I quite like the execution.
Well, it was a well-made film, like aesthetically speaking, kind of thing. It's just like you say, the story, the acting, and the dialogue was just bizarre.
All the essential stuff was just B movie level. Mm.
I see you eyeing my lemon drink.
Actually, my favorite is I'm talking to a plastic plant.
Yeah, well, I bought a $6 bottle of cough syrup, and I didn't even have a cough.
Oh, dear. There's this, like, side plot with Zooey Deschanel and Mark Wahlberg where they're having marital issues because she had dinner or lunch or tiramisu with somebody at the office. And she feels like she cheated. I mean, this is the shit we're dealing with here. I'm like, this is supposed to be, like, the ending of relationships over tiramisu. I mean, it's laughable stuff. I mean, so I can't possibly imagine that he did this not knowing what he was getting himself into. Huh.
I will admit, I really like all the death and carnage in the film. Although the lion scene kind of thing is a little sad.
Everybody talks about the lion scene. You know what? I watched it and I thought, I mean, it didn't stand out for me. It's just part of the cheesiness.
I don't know. Like when the gun was dropped and it was picked up
that
again,
was cool.
I like that.
I mean, and that's the thing. I actually didn't think he had it in him.
If you've seen the trailer, you realize everyone's killing themselves. So we're not actually giving anything away.
No, we're not. I mean, and that particular scene is actually in the trailer as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I didn't realize that he had that dark sort of murderous rage in him. Because, I mean, some of those deaths are pretty brutal. I mean, really brutal.
Yeah. But
I like them.
So it sounds like a recommendation if you know what you're getting yourself into.
Yeah.
If you're in for a good chuckle and you don't mind a lot of sort of blood.
Yeah, because there's a lot of blood. I actually noticed yesterday the picture that Andrew used for the review header. It's a scene from the gun shooting to the head. And in the movie, I mean, we've seen the trailer and we've seen the image before, but in the image, I noticed there's no blood. And in the movie, there's actually blood squirting out of the hole in his head. And for whatever reason, I just noticed that now, and I thought, oh yeah, that's really cool, man. Definitely CG.
I also very much like the whole demo house where, like, they're sitting at the table looking like they're eating, and, like, he picks up the wine glass and, like, goes to drink from it, and, like, the wine is actually, like, an epoxy inside the glass, so it does.
That was a really, really strange little scene, though, because, I mean, that whole bit in that house just seemed like, not that it was from another movie, it just seemed really out of place. Because, I mean, they're going out to the middle of, like, nowhere, they're trying to get away from large populations. And out in the middle of nowhere is this house.
New development coming.
Yeah. I mean, I think that his message about, like, because there is, I mean, the last scene, I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. It's this, like, global warming bullshit. You're kidding, right? But, I mean, he drops it in with throughout the whole movie. I mean,
you know, that's probably my least favorite thing. Not what you're referring to, but sort of like the shiny happiness at the very end kind of thing. Like, what? They don't care that everyone died?
Apparently not.
Like, not everyone died, but
you figure, like, half of the East Coast is gone.
I know. 3 months later, and everyone's all happy and
like nothing
fine
ever happened.
And, oh, big smiles and skipping down the
street. They're still driving
the
cars. Everything is still normal.
Yeah, I bet home prices dropped. That'd be good.
Oh, dear. I mean, it's not without its huge problems. It really isn't. But
go for the funny dialogue.
I think it works on a purely I'm not a big fan of B-movies, and I had a blast. I thought it was great fun.
Oh, it's weird. It's not really a B-film. It's just unintentionally funny film is what it is.
I still don't think it's unintentional.
Nah.
I really don't. But we'll leave that up to you. Let us know what you think.
Well, if it was supposed to be that funny, then the trailer did not make it out like that. It made it out to be a thriller. So
yeah,
a lot of people.
But do you honestly think anybody would be interested in seeing a comedy by M. Night Shyamalan? Like, let's be honest here. That's not what people are liking his movies for.
If it involves all the cheesy dialogue in there, I'd watch another one.
Well, there we go. But moving on from something that is either intentionally or unintentionally funny to something that is definitely supposed to be funny, you don't mess with the Zohan, or as Colleen called it, a.k.a. Humus Hut Central. And I'm not quite sure where that came from, but Dale, over to you.
Over to me.
Because I haven't seen it. Colleen, did you see this?
I haven't seen it.
Okay, so you're on your own. We'll just question you.
I'm solo. Wow.
So was it actually funny?
No, I have to say, I'm not a big Adam Sandler fan, but I liked this movie. And it really, for those that actually listened to our advice and saw the Oscar-nominated, or did it win, short West Bank Story?
Yeah, which is fabulous. I'll put it in the show notes.
Which is fabulous. This really felt like these comedians saw West Bank Story and started spinning a story off of it. Not that it's the same story. It's not really the same story, but it has so much of the same elements. And it really does take the piss out of both sides of the whole... Israeli Arab conflict, Palestinian conflict over there. Yeah, but it is really just a very lighthearted comedy. It actually pushes the limits on some of the humor. I thought I found actually some of the scenes a little bit more offensive than some of the stuff in Postal.
Oh wow!
Just some weird stuff. Hummus figures very strongly. You won't believe all the uses there are for hummus out of this thing. But the humor was, I was really surprised. Sandler really pulled off this somewhat effeminate but very masculine. So the premise of the story is he is basically an Israeli super agent. They throw in some Hong Kong style super CG stuff where he's doing these heroic things like running across rooftops and super karate stopping bullets and stuff like that.
Nice.
It all works, but he wants to be a hairdresser. So he goes to America, fakes his death and goes to America.
Fakes his death.
Where, you know, in a contrived but funny thing, he winds up in this area of New York, and across the street is Little Lebanon, and he's in Little Israel, essentially. And the story progresses from there. He embarks on his career to become a hairdresser. There was some great acting. The bit parts in here, they had some really great characters. I was really impressed with the acting on that. The comedy, I was laughing through it. Like I say, some of it, I thought maybe went a little bit too far. But I was actually really surprised. Adam Sandler comedy that I enjoyed.
Well, the part in the trailer that I like is Welcome to the Hezbollah Hotline. Yeah. For weapons of mass destruction, press number one. That, for me, like, cracks me up every single time, and I don't know why. I know there's something wrong with it, but I still laugh every time.
There is the thing that really surprised me was having... I live in a neighborhood with a lot of Iranian. It's not quite a little Iran, but a very strong Iranian community. And listening to the accents in the movie, some of the speech patterns, it reminded me of some of the people in my neighborhood, actually. So I'm wondering what people from the region will think of it. I mean, it is dealing with some hot button issues for them, and they might not find some of the stuff quite so funny. But I think in terms of the characterizations of the people, they probably got, you know, some of the caricatures down pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really not curious to see it at all. But now with the West Bank story thrown in, I kind of am. I can't help myself. I really love that short. I think it's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, I think I'll probably end up renting this. At one point, I thought about seeing it in the theater, but I'm already so behind in what I need to see.
Yeah, I would say rent it. There's nothing on there where you need a big screen. But if you are in the, you know, in the movieplex and just looking for something really light.
Yeah, well, this weekend would have been something good for it because there's nothing else out there worth seeing. But, you know, I wouldn't know because I didn't actually go to the theater this weekend. So moving on, something that's been out for...
Yes, you did.
I did?
Serenity.
Oh, well, yeah, but nothing new.
Yeah, it was a good time to go see Serenity.
Yeah, pretty much, because it was a lame-ass weekend. Something that's been out for a couple of weeks, The Strangers. Liv Tyler and... Oh, my God, my mind's...
Speedman? No.
Scott Speedman.
Yeah, Scott Speedman.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Yeah, Home Invasion gone wrong.
Yeah.
to say the least.
I have seen this being compared a lot to the film Eels, which I haven't seen. Have you seen that?
I have.
Is it valid?
The comparison.
No.
No. I mean, the basic plot is the same, but I think any home invasion story is essentially the same.
Yeah, Home Alone.
Yeah, that. I mean, you could compare this to, if you really wanted to, Funny Games.
Yeah, which I have seen, and that's sort of what I got. The pointless violence, although...
Yeah, pretty much.
Not the comedicness.
Well, and you're not being chastised for watching it either, right? Like, Haneke has this meta thing going on, and there's no meta here. It's just pure entertainment. But I thought it really worked.
Mm-hmm.
I don't watch a lot of horror movies. I mean, I haven't seen that many good ones in the last little while, but this one really worked for me. It had some legitimate scares.
Yeah. I found myself jumping a couple times, like when the curtains are sort of like flung back and someone's there. Yeah. It had its jump moments kind of thing, which I normally don't get too much of. But overall, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really liked it too. I love the music in this. For whatever reason, the music really works for me here.
Yeah, that I don't even know what sort of genre of music
it would be like some... I mean, if I had to categorize it, I think it sounds like some sort of 70s, like, country...
Country blues, soul, something
pretty
weird.
Much.
Yeah,
but I mean, it really works with the film. I mean, you know, they're out in the middle of nowhere, really. They're out in the country. Looks like some sort of summer home, and they happen to have a record player.
And the thing I didn't get from the trailers was they weren't happy before any of this happened. I didn't realize that.
I loved that opening because it sort of opens in the middle of this. I mean, they're
crying.
Problem
in the relationship.
Yeah, they're crying, and you're not told why. Like, that's for you to figure out. And you don't know why, you know, before they even get to the house, things are going wrong.
Yeah, you hear them, two young people alone in a little chateau kind of thing by themselves. You don't automatically think of sort of strife.
Yeah, no, you think, you know, they've gone to celebrate something or other. But I thought it was a really bold opening. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he didn't give you everything up front, I mean, you sort of had to work for it.
Oh, I love that.
No, you know, it starts you right in the middle of the action and you sort of have to stick with it to get the full story. And it's a good 20 minutes before you actually find out why it is that, you know, they're in the situation that they are now. I really think it worked to the film's benefit because it draws you in immediately. I mean, I don't think that the opening did anything good for it. Like the voiceover and they could have done without that. But the opening itself I quite liked too with the kids.
You know, the one thing I didn't like in the film was the very ending. The one where they alluded to, like, this is going to be the next franchise kind of moment that so many films kind of have.
Yeah.
I did not like that at all. It did not need to be. It was just something cheesy tacked on that kind of left me going, ugh.
I didn't really get that sense from it, though. I got enough closure from it that I didn't see automatically franchise. I see what you mean, though.
Yeah,
No.
Not to spoil anything. As
no.
Much. Yeah. There's a line thrown out at the end that you're like, what?
Yeah.
Not as Strangers too. No.
Well, I don't...
Two and a half.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, the film did, I think, better than they had expected. And, I mean, it's definitely really well put together. I mean, for a first-time film. I mean, for a horror film of any genre, it's, you know, I mean, it's a great film.
Bertino or something? Mm-hmm. Or Brian Bertino?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know that was his first film.
Yeah, his first film, written and directed.
That's,
I mean, and it's
a good sign.
Yeah, it's a stellar... takeoff from the opening. I mean, it's awesome. It really is a really good little horror movie.
Because M. Night is making an opening? I
don't know. M. Night was never horror, though.
Bad deal.
Yeah, I don't know.
I love the limerick that Luke Harrington of Movie Zeal wrote for my site. It was awesome.
Oh, well, you're going to have to share.
Oh, off the top of my head? No, I can't. But, yeah, it was all about M. Shyamalan sort of diminishing returns kind of thing. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Back on topic. How did Liv do as a scare gal?
I think she's fine. I don't know. I wasn't... I thought they both did a fine job.
I don't like Liv Tyler as an actress, but in this particular sort of medium, I think she does okay. Like, I... I see a good future in sort of like horror films for.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I really like her. I think she's limited range, I think is what you would say. I mean,
she's really no Jamie Lee Curtis.
She's no Jamie Lee Curtis.
No.
I mean, there's something about Jamie Lee Curtis that I don't know even what it is, because, you know, you think. I mean, thinking back to Halloween, there really isn't a lot there from her either, but there's a bit of an energy. There's just something that draws you to her, and I don't think Liv Tyler has that in general. I mean, I've liked movies that she's been in, and I like her in general, but she just doesn't really draw me in. She's very much a pretty face, and I mean, she's adequate. I mean, she's not by any means a bad actress, I don't think, but she's got limitations. Yeah. And I don't think she quite reaches them here. I think she does a fairly good job here. But neither Speedman nor Tyler really stood out for me.
Yeah, for me, Liv Tyler has always been just one of the horde of actresses that are just okay.
Yeah.
Like, but there's a lot of stars out there just okay.
Than the average okay actress.
True enough, she's, I mean, hot.
She's a very good-looking woman. And, you know, Scott Speedman, not hard on the eyes either, let's be honest here.
Not at all.
So, I mean, I knew what I was getting myself in for. And, I mean, like I said, I think they both do a fine job of what they're given.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really not given a lot to do, you know. They have to be scared. But they do a good job of being scared. I mean, that's pretty much all they have to do. Well, I don't know about that, actually. There's a bit of relationship stuff at the beginning that I think they do a really good job of selling as well. They really feel like a couple that's been together for a while.
Uncomfortable situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you can tell that there's something a little bit more there. I think they play that really, really well. It'd be interesting to see how many takes they have to do for that. But they do manage to get that relationship dynamic just right, I thought. I really didn't have any problems with this movie. I really, really liked it. Highly recommend it.
Yeah. I wouldn't hesitate to probably rent that again.
Yeah, neither would I. Moving on from horror to heavy metal. Colleen, you and I had a chance to catch up with Global Metal. This is the second film from... they finally put it on IMDb. Yay!
Serious?
Sorry. Yeah, it's on here.
Link.
Sam Dunn and, oh dear, I can't remember the guy's
other name. Scott McFadden.
Thank you. They brought us Metal, A Headbanger's Journey a couple of years ago, which rocked, even if you're not a heavy metal fan. And they've come back to bring us the fans of heavy metal the world over. And I really, really like this documentary.
I was surprised. I went into it with some trepidation because, you know, my metal days are so far behind me. It's been a long time since I cracked open the Venom records. Although I think I have a Judas Priest back patch somewhere. I don't know. I doubt I would have thrown that out.
There's some things that just never go away.
Yeah.
Judas Priest is one of them.
That's right. Breaking the law. Dun, dun. Yeah. Anyways. Yeah, this was really interesting. Like, not a huge in-depth thing because they were jumping around a lot. Like, sort of little spotlights on where metal is in different areas. And some of it was like really interesting. The one thing that I've been brewing over in my head over and over again is the whole thing about Japan loving Kiss. Yeah. And why is this surprising considering the culture embraces kabuki?
Yeah, and but that was a really interesting connection. Because the fact is, I mean, yeah, you talk about, you know, people liking Kiss and no big deal, right? But you think Japan, this, you know, really straight-laced, everything is like by the book kind of thing, but they love Kiss. And like when you don't think about it, it's kind of hard to wrap your brain around that.
Yeah, they showed Gene Simmons and then they showed, I forget what the actual character is, but like in a kabuki play. And like,
and then you're like,
the similarities, other than a little bit less black leather,
yeah,
it's there.
And you know, but they make that connection for you. You're like, how did I never see this before? I mean, it makes perfect sense. But I mean, I think for me, it was an interesting mix between talking to the fans of heavy metal the world over, or in places where you wouldn't expect to see heavy metal because of whatever preconceived notions we have about what heavy metal is. And then the bands within those places that also are creating the music.
The lead singer of Sepultura?
Sepultura.
Yeah, sorry.
Brazil.
Yeah. It was interesting listening to him because he was talking about how heavy metal to the Brazilians, or at least a big portion of the Brazilians, is basically almost synonymous with basically their freedoms, because it was literally the first thing they got as soon as their dictatorship was basically
abolished.
Over.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's an emotional... I mean, I think that changes from culture to culture, right? And you see that with the music as well. They've all added their own personal touch to the music itself. And so you get heavy metal, but it all has a twist. I mean, for me, the most interesting was Israel, where you have this extremely traditional Israeli music infused with heavy metal. And I mean, it sounds amazing.
That guy had the nicest voice, too, yeah. Like singing voice, just beautiful.
I had to look it up, man. Like, I did my homework. I looked up, like, globalization, it's a good thing.
Wasn't one of the Israeli bands also horrorcore?
Yes. Which cracked me up to no end. Let's talk a little bit about the reaction from the fans when Lars from Metallica was on screen.
Oh, God.
Now, there was some discussion with one of two young men from...
Dubai. Yeah. Oh, no, they were from Iran, but they were in Dubai, so they could actually talk to them.
Yeah, and they were talking about how they don't have access to this music because you can't import it. So they downloaded it illegally. And of course, every fan knows what Metallica's done to their fans, which is essentially take them to court to sue them for downloading their music illegally. So it's perfect because they have Lars on screen.
Lars is there on screen, and I also noticed Lars is about the only person they interviewed that's wearing like sort of a non-black color, like he's in like almost like a pink color, and he's going. Yeah, the whole computer downloading thing, that's great. It's enabling all these people to get access to our music, which never would have had the chance. I'm totally behind this and support this kind of thing.
The crowd lost.
The crowd's like going, boo, you suck, Lars.
Pretty much. I mean, we saw it in a full house. And, I mean, a lot of metal fans in the audience. A lot. Like, I would say a good 90%. And yeah, there was a lot of dissent from the audience when that happened. I thought that was quite interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, overall, I thought it was a really interesting documentary. I actually read a review from the Star. I think this is the Toronto Star. And one of the complaints that the reviewer had was that they didn't give you enough information about the individual like bands like that they went. You know, they talked to whoever and. You get a little snippet. And my feeling was that they gave you just enough to sort of get you interested. Because in reality, I mean, they only have 90 minutes. They can't really give you the whole story, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
they've got to be focus selective. On three bands then, kind of thing.
Pretty much. Yeah. So, I mean, I really liked the overview that we got in general.
And you know what? The person says that, but you... Well, I and you both... that's not good grammar. But both looked up visual K bands from Japan instantly because we needed to see.
The first thing I did when I got home, I'm like, I need to check this out, man.
You were checking out the Israeli band. So, like, there was enough for us to go, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Twitter was kind of crazy that morning because I'm like, okay, check this out. And this. Okay. Yeah, I went a little nuts. It was pretty cool. But, I mean, in general, I thought it was a really good documentary. I mean, we're not breaking any new ground as far as making film. But I think that there's something here for everybody. Metal was the same way. It's not just for metal fans. It really is for anybody that's even mildly interested in, you know, music. And in this case, how music changes, you know, how fans interact. And how there really is, you know, an audience for whatever the world over. I mean, I'm sure you can find I don't even know what I'm trying to say now. Fan for everything somewhere.
That's right. Some small outpost in the Pacific Island has a absolutely massive, huge love on for like Quiet Riot. Like God knows.
Listening to you actually reminds me of a big debate that happened in Canada. I'm not sure how many years ago about. Our culture being completely overtaken by, you know, the American cultural imperative. And what imperative. That's the wrong word. But anyway, being overwhelmed by all this American programming coming in, we had to preserve Canadian culture. But what emerged out of when that debate was going on was, and what sounds like happened here too, is how actually things kind of fuse with the local culture and you get new combinations of things. So you'll get, you're talking about that thing in Israel was just a perfect example. And we got the grunge scene, and see, even within, you know, a major like the States, you get, well, you get these offshoots of morphings that are different from...
There's no such thing really as heavy metal. Heavy metal is like, I don't know, 50, 60 different like Visual K could probably be broken down into like a half a dozen very specific Visual K sort of heavy metal styles, subsects. Yeah,
it's cool that someone's documenting that.
Yeah, and I think what I find particularly interesting is he really does, I mean, it's not in your face, an anthropological study, but that's certainly always in the background. And I think that's really, really interesting. And you don't get a lot of that in documentaries, at least not the ones that I've seen. And to see one that's just this interesting, that, you know, anybody can sit down and watch it and take something from it, I think is really, really good. I mean, it's just a lot of fun, too. You know, you don't really need to take anything from it. Just sit down and enjoy. I mean, it's a trip. But that's me. I really, really like this movie a lot.
Very good.
So, okay. We'll move on. Oh, no.
We should also probably mention that we saw that at the First Weekends Club.
Yeah, the First Weekend Club did do a screening in Toronto and Vancouver on the Thursday before it opened. It did open officially last week on the 20th in Vancouver and Toronto, and it opens in Montreal on the 27th. So, and I think that has something to do with the heavy metal.
Yeah, there's some sort of
music
festival
going on in Montreal next weekend, so I'm pretty sure it's got some tie-in there. But yeah, keep an eye out for it. Coming to a theater near you, it's definitely worth checking out. It's pretty awesome. Moving on to the DVD selection. And here it was where we bypass DVD and backtrack for a minute.
Yeah,
the good old days. VHS,
yes. I recently consulted myself because I had a broken molar. I went to the local garage sale, and he had a big old box full of VHS tapes. So I rummaged through, and I found four good ones. And, good.
Good by arguable. Colleen Stander.
One is called Jake Speed, Don't Watch This Film. But one I will quickly talk about is a Roman Coppola film.
Oh dear.
And it's fairly recent, like 2002, called CQ.
Run for your life, run now.
Yeah. I bought this because I didn't even need to read the back of the box because the cover looks so much like a Barbarella spinoff. I had to buy it.
We have pictures. Come on by, take a look at them. They're fabulous.
It really is two films. There is the B film / Barbarella sort of weirdness that is called Dragonfly, which they ripped off Barbarella a lot. They also ripped off a lot of Dr. Strangelove, Kubrick's like opening sequence with all the words. It's like, who is Dragonfly?
Oh, damn.
And the other part is sort of like this drama about this guy trying to become a director and things like that. And that part kind of generally sucked. I'm thinking maybe I might have to actually make my own sort of armchair quarterback version of this and cut out everything that doesn't involve the B film, because I think the B film would have gotten a lot better marks than the other part.
So does Roman go now? Do you want to tell us who's in this great gem of a film?
Sure. Jeremy Davis, Angelique Lindvall, Gerard Depardieu. As I sound that one out as I'm saying it.
Depardieu.
Jason Schwartzman and Billy Zane.
Oh, God. I think I said Billy Zane is like the guy that's on in every bad movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's usually a good indication.
But
of
he
its
was
quality.
In Titanic.
I liked him in The Phantom.
Oh, okay. There we go.
He was in The Phantom, though, was he? No, that was... Was he?
Yeah.
I thought Jeff Goldblum is...
I haven't seen The Phantom, but I know for a fact he was the Phantom in a Phantom movie.
Okay. If you can find this film, you know what? It's actually worth watching. But you know what? It's worth watching and then basically throwing it as far away from you as possible.
We're selling our VHS copy, right?
Oh, that's right.
Oh, online auction.
$35 starting bid. So if you're interested, come check us out.
I'll even sign it.
Oh, autographed by Colleen.
That's right.
And we'll finish off with something that's been out for a while. It's now out on DVD. And Dale, you just caught up with it. The Jane Austen Book Club.
Yeah.
Now, this is based on a book, and it's about a group of people that get together once a month to talk about Jane Austen books.
The works of Jane Austen.
Yeah. And I really, really enjoyed this the first time I saw it. I look forward to sitting with it again. Thank you very much.
I was actually so... I mean, the reason I wanted to see it is I'm something of an Emily Blunt fan. And when, especially when... In the previews, I could hardly pick her out because her look was so much different. I thought, oh, I'm just going to have to watch this. And I was really impressed. They did the ensemble, and it's very much an ensemble thing. It's a group of six people. They each pick a Jane Austen novel, and there's a bunch of other backstory going on. And we could probably spoil it, but I won't particularly. But suffice it to say that all of the characters are undergoing their challenges, and... The group isn't a cohesive group. There's like four friends and two outsiders. And there's just a lot of really wonderful character moments in the film that are completely natural. Like they caught the awkward group dynamic perfectly.
There were
times in there I was cringing and I've been there on both sides of the equation. Going, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? Or, oh my God, who invited her?
And I really enjoyed it as well. And I think I mentioned to you, I actually read the book after I saw the film. And I didn't like the book nearly as much as I liked the movie. Because the characters in the book are just so ugly. And the movie still has its moments, but it's just a feel-good, warm cup of tea.
This isn't this isn't an awesomely fantastic movie that, it didn't get nominated for...
No, but really heartwarming. I really like it. It's like drinking a cup of tea. It's just, you sit down with, something kind of just fun and, it just touches all the right buttons for me at least. And I really, really liked it. And it doesn't help. It helps that you've got, what is his name?
Oh, Jimmy Smith? Hugh Dancy, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Hugh Dancy for the younger crowd. Jimmy Smith's for the older crowd.
There you go. It pleases everybody.
I actually listened to the director's commentary, which was more than just the director. And there was a lot of interesting trivia and that kind of thing. Like, they were all teasing each other about the Jimmy Smiths and getting... Amy Bremerman involved because she'd wanted to work with Jimmy Smith, but no, she was like, when do I get to kiss him?
All the stuff you find out in the director's commentary only.
And actually,
being an actress.
They chose I can't remember his name, but he's a Canadian, you said.
Yes. Kevin Zegers.
Kevin Zegers.
He was in Normal.
They actually chose him because, there's some interesting stories on the director, the director's commentary about some of the stuff. And one of them was the director saying when they were casting him, they weren't looking at Emily at Zegers. It's like they knew that he could do it. They were seeing how Emily Blunt was reacting to him, and he made her blush.
And they
knew and that was why they chose him for that role. Yeah.
That's interesting. Well, I think it's a fun movie. I mean, it's just a nice...
One of the things I particularly like, I'm always curious about movies that factor in books in a big way, like books that are about people that enjoy reading books or writing books and that kind of thing. And in this one, there really was that interesting tie-in to the Jane Austen stories. There was. I haven't read a lot of Jane Austen. Most of my Jane Austen knowledge comes from film. But
Austen's fabulous.
They talked about some of the parallels on the director's thing. The other thing that I really I liked about this, and I just zoned out.
Is it the Le Guin stuff or the convention stuff?
No, actually,
that was kind of funny.
I pontificated too long, and the thought's gone. But,
how one of the actresses ended up becoming one of the experts on the film?
Surprisingly. Well, I mean, that was some of the other trivia, was the youngest actress on the film was actually the biggest Jane Austen expert.
Nice. I like Austen a lot. And actually, tying into both Austen and director's cuts, or director's commentaries, I should say. So, you know me, I'm a huge fan of Pride and Prejudice. I've seen that movie, like, way too many times, even just in the last year. I'm afraid to count. It's so sad. And the last time I watched it, which was about a week and a half ago, I decided, I'm going to make this interesting. I'm going to listen to the director's commentary. And it was actually quite a very, very interesting because I actually saw things I hadn't seen before. And I've seen that movie so many damn times. But yeah, it was very interesting. And I really like it. And I still love that movie more than ever. That's just me.
Oh, okay. I just remembered my point.
Oh, see, perfect.
one of the aspects of the movie I really liked was it got into the essence of reading, which was identifying with the characters.
Mm.
And one of the interesting interplays through the whole movie was the characters that they were identifying in the Jane Austen book. And in the book discussion, how they became proxies for the way that they were feeling. And there were a lot of really fun moments around that. And I suspect if I had read Jane Austen, it would have been even funnier.
Well, and I think that's the thing that a lot of people take from Austen is that, I mean, the books were written so long ago, and yet they still have some sort of value today in the way relationships act, you know. So the situation is different. You're not acting in the same way. You're not interacting in the same way. But the emotions are all the same.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Jane Austen is still so popular. I mean, it helps the fact that, you know, she's one of the first female authors. It helps a great deal. You know, I mean, widely read. You know, there weren't really that many women writing at the time. So, I mean, to add to that, she was one of the first to have her own voice. I would say she pretty much invented chick lit, if you want to call it that. I hate that term, but, you know, whatever.
They're not using it anymore, apparently. But
she was the first one to really...
Actually, there was a woman before her that the CBC did a really interesting ideas program on her, who apparently kind of paved the way for her.
There's been more than one.
This particular woman did a written essay on her mastectomy that was done without anesthesia, and it's kind of chilling. But she was also an author, Fanny someone. I'll find the ideas program if I can. In any event, I suspect that because there were so few authors, to actually get noticed, you had to
that
be
too.
Very, very good. So
that too. Well, you need to make a connection with your readers, right?
Yeah.
Be whatever it is that you're writing. So, I don't know.
Austen. If you're looking for that, you know, mug of cocoa movie,
this is the one for you. Colleen is like shaking her head; she's not interested whatsoever.
Yeah, you know what? I think I'd rather watch
CQ.
Anything inspired by Andre Dumas before I'd watch. You know,
that's always that's good too. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a Dumas fan, so I'll leave you guys
huge
to
Dumas
it.
Fan.
Oh, man.
Yeah. The literary comes out.
Mm. He's just not done well is most of the time.
Oh, those books are so incredible. Like, and they screw it up every time they attempt.
Well, and I'm not even a big fan of the books. It's not my style, period. I mean, I've tried. It's just not for me. I've let it go. You know, there are some things I'm never going to read, and Dumas is one of them. But on the topic of books, we'll sign off. We'll come back at you next week with some more movies, I promise. I'm sure there's something next week wanted. Maybe, just maybe. Oh, look at the glint in Colleen's eye, if you could
only
see it.
It's coming up, isn't it?
Next Saturday.
Hooray.
Saturday. It doesn't have a Friday release?
It does have a Friday release.
Oh, well, I'm seeing that as soon as I'm done work.
Oh, well, don't text message me. I don't want to know. I'm taking the group
Marina,
on Saturday.
They all die.
Screw you. I'd still see it. So it doesn't matter, to be completely honest.
Well, I say that every time with a film. Yeah, they all die. It's great.
The blanket
statement. It's a happy
statement.
Ending.
Well, but we've got Wanted and WALL-E.
Oh, my God. I'm Wanted.
I'm
looking forward to an animated film.
That's amazing, actually.
I know. I'm so looking forward to WALL-E. It's
so are you going to do like back-to-back on Friday? Or
no.
Or are you going to spread them out over the weekend?
I'll go on Saturday at noon before anyone else shows up at the theater. And then I'll have
when the parents, they call
again?
The kids?
No, yeah. Not at noon.
Oh.
It's weird.
I don't know, man.
The animated, yeah.
I'd be careful.
I agree. There's more people at the second matinee than the first, but
Pitt Meadows still... at noon, there is no one in that theater. It's great. I have had virtual empty or completely empty theaters every time I've gone in the last little while.
Having doesn't hobo with a shotgun out in the parking lot doesn't hurt either.
Nice. We had. It's been months since we brought up hobo with a shotgun. It was only a matter of time before it made a reappearance.
It's my happy thought.
So, until next week.
We'll see you after the credits.
Woke up cold one Tuesday. I'm looking tired and feeling quite sick. I felt like there was something missing in my day-to-day life. So I quickly opened the wardrobe, pulled out some jeans and a t-shirt that seemed clean, topped it off with a pair of old shoes that were ripped around the seams. And I thought, these shoes just don't suit me. Hey, I put some new shoes on and suddenly everything's right. I said, hey, I put some new shoes on and everybody's smiling, it's so inviting. Oh, short on money but long on time, slowly strolling in the sweet sunshine. And I'm running late and I don't need an excuse, so wearing my brand new shoes. Woke up late one Thursday and I'm seeing stars as I'm rubbing my eyes, and I felt like there were 2 days missing as I focused on the time. Then I made my way to the kitchen, but I had to stop from the shock of what I found. A room full of all of my friends all dancing round and round. And I thought, hello, new shoes, bye-bye blues. Hey, I put some new shoes on and suddenly everything is right. I said, hey, I put some new shoes on and everybody's smiling, it's so inviting. Short on money but long on time, slowly strolling in the sweet sunshine. And I'm running late and I don't need an excuse, so wearing my brand new shoes. Take me wandering through these streets where bright lights and angels meet. Stone to stone, they take me on. I'm walking till the break of dawn. Take me wandering through these streets where bright lights and angels meet. Stone to stone, they take me on. I'm walking till the break of dawn. Hey, I put some new shoes on and suddenly everything is right. I said, hey, I put some new shoes on and everybody's smiling, it's so inviting. Oh, short on money but long on time, slowly strolling in the sweet sunshine. And I'm running late and I don't need an excuse, so wearing my brand new shoes. Oh, hey, I put some new shoes on and suddenly everything is right. I said, hey, I put some new shoes on and everybody's smiling, it's so inviting. Late and I don't need an excuse, so I'm wearing my brand new shoes.